welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy.
And today we're going to be talking about adding a new switch to the network. We last episode talked about these switches we were using for a lab environment. One of those is going to become the switch for your Raspberry Pi data center. So we're also going to be briefly talking about that as well. But we really want to talk about that whole process of adding this new switch to the network. Now, before we did anything, we added that switch into our inventory in ITOP, which is our IT management solution. And that takes care of a bunch of things, tickets, change management, inventory. So we also went into change management and we created a new ticket and we went through a planning process. So why don't you go through that for us now?
Okay, so my switch that I configured, the one that I'm going to have to plug in my Raspberry Pi Center into, was called CSW2. And that is also the same name as our core switch. So the very first thing that we did was we renamed our core switch to CSW1. We did a backup configuration. We made that one the root bridge. And we also configured the ports for the core switch and for CSW2. So after that, we also did a fall backup plan, because if something goes wrong, we can always put all the old configuration back and reload the switch. So we took care of what we wanted to do, and then if everything failed, what we needed to do to fix it.
Right. And that's usually called a fallback plan, or at least in ITOP, they call it a fallback plan. Sometimes it's called a rollback plan. Mm-hmm. And it's basically the steps you're going to take in order to put things back in case something doesn't go right.
Right.
So that's why they have that there.
And that's probably why you had me do the backup configuration during our plan.
Right. Now, in this particular case, we didn't have everything that we wanted to have in our plan. Mm-hmm. It wasn't totally complete. And I wasn't too worried about that, because even if we made a mistake somewhere, we have a backup of the configuration. So if we make a mistake someplace as we're learning how to do this, we can always go back to our configuration that we have a backup of and put everything back to the way it was before we broke it.
Right.
So I'm not too worried about any major changes that we make here. So that's one of the things that you have to be aware of, is that especially when we're learning something, as long as you have a process for putting things back to the way they used to be, you should be fine. So now we need to talk about our previous lab, because we did that to sort of help us learn how to do things with spanning tree and trunking and all of that. And we talked about that last episode. So was that something that helped any when we went through this process of installing the new switch into the network?
Actually, it did help me, because I was able to see, you know, when we configure the root bridge and the non-root bridge, and actually see, you had me see how the ports reacted and how they got reconfigured. Actually, it was really good for me to see how it worked, because it kind of made it more clear. And it, showing me the commands about show spanning dash tree to be able to see, you know, the ports that were designated and forwarding, and, you know, all of that was really helpful.
Yeah. Now, on the core switch, when we went to go and configure that, I said, okay, let's bring up the configurations that we have from the lab side. And then we were able to use some of those configurations for the core switch, for like setting up the root bridge and the trunking. So what did you think of that? I mean, is that something that did that help any, or what did you think of that whole process?
You know, at first I kind of was like, wait a minute, you know, you explained to me that spanning tree would look at the lowest MAC address, and that would be the one that would be the root bridge, right? But then I never really knew that you can configure a specific switch to be the root switch, so then another one wouldn't take over. And, you know, the explanation, when you explained what you said to me, because I thought that was really, really good for me to kind of drive it home.
Right. So as we're configuring our core switch as the root bridge, I said, okay, you know, because we used, basically what we were doing was we were not having
no,
to...
No, no, explain why you decided to force that one to be the root bridge so another switch couldn't go in and take over. Because that, for me, that was really a good thing to learn.
Right, right. So one of the things that you want to make sure you do in any network is when you're configuring your switches, the switch with the lowest MAC address is automatically going to become the root bridge. So if you don't have one designated, the one with the lowest MAC address is going to take over. So in our particular case, we figured out that the switch we have in there now, our Cisco switch that is the core switch, was already the root bridge, probably because it has the lowest MAC address, because we didn't define that as the root bridge. So what I wanted you to do was define that as the root bridge so that if you happen to introduce a switch with a lower MAC address, that one's already defined as the root bridge. We've made it the root bridge. We force it to be the root bridge. So some other switch that comes along can't take over because it has a lower MAC address.
Right, because it may not have the configuration that we really wanted for the network. And that to me was like, oh my God, I knew that it would do that. It would go, you know, when you have a spanning tree, will go to the lowest MAC address. But it never crossed my mind that, you know, what if you bring another switch, you introduce it, and all of a sudden that becomes it. And when you pointed it out, I was like, we did the specific configuration for this. We had the ports the way that we wanted to. It would be a disaster if something else gets plugged in and then it takes over. So,
well, when we talk about spanning tree is not, it's not going to be a disaster if some other switch becomes the root bridge. Maybe.
Well, ports are not configured on that switch the same that we had?
So in this particular case, remember, spanning tree only takes a look at loops within the network, loops within layer two, loops within spanning tree, and then it's going to block certain ones if it needs to prevent loops from forming within your switching environment. That's all it's going to do. So one of the things you have to be concerned about here is that if another switch becomes the root bridge, it could potentially start blocking ports that you don't want to have blocked.
Exactly. Now, what if that other switch was configured with a port channel and it was actually, you know, doing different things? That's why I thought that it wouldn't be
different. Well, remember, we're only talking about spanning tree.
Right.
So it doesn't have anything to do with port channels or anything like that. It's only on spanning tree and where you have the blocking happen.
Okay.
And it may end up blocking things you don't want blocked to prevent loops. And that can cause like a whole part of the network to go offline. In our case, we don't have to worry about that.
But in a protection environment, that would be a disaster. That's how I would look at it. I wouldn't want that
yes,
to happen.
And like I said in the previous episode, I have heard of people talking about that, and they had trouble trying to figure those things out, which is why you do want to have a defined root bridge, and you want to make sure it stays the root bridge, and you don't have another switch that could potentially take over.
Another thing that was really good for me is that I didn't really understand that the non-root bridge was the local one. And then when when you were saying, okay, which one is the root bridge? And you were trying to get me to say, which one was it?
Right. And that's when we had switch two configured, or we were going through the process of getting switch two configured. So why don't you talk about, you know, getting the cables connected as well? So because we had to get a cable connected from the core switch to your new switch you're going to use for the data center.
Right. So we did that, right? And it was, then you had me do that command to go look and see which one was the root bridge.
Correct. So, well, before we even did the cable, we had to go in there and clean up some stuff, right?
Right.
Because we actually had on that particular switch that you're going to use for your data center.
Right.
It was the old configuration from our lab. So we went into that switch and we took a look at the running config because we wanted to make sure there's nothing in there that could potentially be an issue.
Right.
So we saw that that's a root has a root bridge command in there to make it a root bridge.
Right.
So we took that out. And there was other
then
stuff in
had,
there, port channels and stuff
had,
like that.
We had port 3 and 4 were a port channel. We're inside the port channel. And then port 2 was a trunk port as well. And you had me take all of those out, and, you know.
Right. So your new switch is connected to the core switch with just one cable.
Right, and it's to port one. So, you know, I sat in there, and then when you had me go in after we cleaned up the configuration, and you had me go look at it, and then you said, okay, can you tell me which one is the root bridge? I looked at the MAC addresses, you know, I was looking at that, and I kept thinking, well, I don't know how to answer this, because, you know, in my mind, it just didn't look like, because, you know, I thought that the, you know, my switch, the one for my Raspberry Pi, the CSW2, it looked like that was the root bridge. And I couldn't understand. And then you said to me, well, look at the non-root bridge because that is your local switch. And then, you know, can you see if there is a root bridge and which one is the root bridge? And then I looked at the cable. And that to me, the cable is what gave me the answer. Does that make sense?
Right. So in this case, it's a concept that may be a little bit difficult to understand. And if nobody tells you these things or you don't know, it's kind of hard to understand some of the show commands, because the show commands will give you lots of information. And if you're not entirely sure how to read that information, it makes no sense. So when you do show spanning dash tree on a Cisco switch, it's going to give you at the top, it's going to say root bridge. It's going to have some information there. And then below that, it's going to have bridge ID. I think it's root bridge and then bridge ID. And then the bridge
ID. It says root ID and bridge ID.
There we go. That's what I was thinking of. So root ID and bridge ID. So root ID identifies the root bridge.
Right.
Bridge ID is local to the box.
So and I didn't know that.
Exactly. So if you don't know that, then you're not going to know what that information really means. So if you're in a situation where you see that the MAC addresses match, that means the root ID and the bridge ID are both the same MAC address.
Right.
That means that box is the root bridge.
See, and for me, because I was in that box, you know, in my CSW2 box, and I was looking at it, I was like, well, this is the root bridge. It says root ID and bridge ID. And granted that the MAC addresses were different, but I was like, how is this seeing that? And then it dawned on me when I saw the cable. I'm like, darn, the cable is connected to the core switch. So the core switch is the root bridge.
Right, because we forced it to be the root bridge.
But had you not told me that that bridge one, the bridge ID, you know, was the non-root bridge, I would have not known that. Had you not told me that I could actually, I would be able to see, you know, with the command show spanning dash tree, also the root bridge, you know, and I should have known that because the cables were connected. But this is the thing. Again, I don't work in IT every day. It's not that I don't make those connections. I know the devices were connected. But, you know, sometimes it's like, where's this cable going? Follow it all the way to the, you know, to the other end and see what happens.
No, and that's true. And these are things that I
felt
think,
bad not knowing that. I just.
Well, but these are things that you don't get until you actually do them. And we were talking about this. You know, some of the things I can do in switching is because I went and took the Cisco certification.
Right.
Because I don't have a lot of experience working with switching either. So two things that I think helped me out. It's the fact that I studied for the Cisco test, the CCNP test.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also helped that I did the labs for those tests. So Cisco has labs, and I think I've talked about this before.
Right.
They have a lab for switching, routing, and troubleshooting. And I took the switching test like three times. And the reason I passed on the third try is because I had taken the labs. So there is some experience that has to be, you have to have some experience in order to pass the labs because, or to pass the test, because there are labs in there and things they ask you where even if you were to read the book and watch the videos, it's not enough. So I think that I know a lot about switching because of the test and the labs, but that's all the experience I have.
Right. But you know what? Doing the labs is essential. Because you and I know this. I mean, I was busting my butt, like I tell you all the time, reading that Network Plus book and answering the questions and watching my videos. It wasn't until I got those labs later on, and then we were doing these, you know, that things are making sense to me. And I know now when they ask me a question about, you know, if you configure this, that, and the other, like if they ask me, how can you tell that, you know, what the root bridge is on spanning tree? You know, what command do you use? I'm going to know. How are you going to be able to tell me? I can look at whatever it is they put on the screen and I'd be able to determine, okay, the root bridge is the one with the lowest MAC address, unless that, you know, they do what we did. So, you know, one of the things, and I guess maybe people will get sick and tired of listening to me say this, experience matters. You have to do your labs. And the certs are important. It doesn't really matter how much experience you have because IT is really vast. It's big. You can't know everything. And sometimes when you learn some things, you know, you may have holes in your training or things that you're missing. And I feel the certs fill those gaps in for you. But at the end of the day, you have got to put into practice what you learn because IT is not something that you can read and then just know.
No, there's a lot of stuff that you know, where reading and watching the videos is not enough. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you have to have 10 years of experience.
No.
As long as you can sit down with some equipment and play with the stuff And now some stuff is just too expensive. You can't get it. But the switches that we have, the ones that we're going to be using for some fancy labs in the future, we got them off eBay. They were like $64 a pop.
That's nice.
So that's perfect. And it has all the Cisco commands in there. We can do a bunch of stuff with these things. We can learn our spanning tree. And that's perfect for us. And then when you go into a production environment, you're probably going to know more about switching than people who've been doing this for 10 years. Unless you focus on switching, unless somebody's telling you how to set these things up, again, it's one of those things where it's really hard to find anybody who's doing switching properly. They don't set their spanning tree up properly. They don't understand how to configure the ports properly. And it's just not done the way it's supposed to be. So we're going to take the time to do it right.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. I have met people afraid of VLANs and spanning tree and things like that. And I have to wonder how much is it the fact that maybe they just don't know how to do it? Because for me, if I would have read spanning tree and we wouldn't have been doing this and you telling me some of the things and how they work, I would have never known. And you know, you used to tell me in the beginning, just jump in there and see what the device can do. And I used to be really afraid because the devices are very intimidating at times. If you don't know what to do, or you're like, what can I make this thing do? You know, so it is a lot of work.
Yeah, when you're first starting out and trying to do these things, it's really difficult. And I think that's where some of the certs come into play. They give you some knowledge. They give you places to start. And then you can, you know, learn from that. And little by little, you're going to get some information that maybe other people don't have because they mm-hmm. haven't taken the time to do that.
Well, with the Cisco certs, they demand so much. They demand that you do so much on the labs to be able to pass the test that there's no way you don't learn them right.
Yeah, and I will say this about spanning tree. I think spanning tree is one of those things that people think they understand, but they don't really. And again, unless somebody's telling them how it's supposed to be configured, how you're supposed to do that, they're not going to know. Or if they're not taking the time to do the research on that, they're not going to know.
Right.
So I know it because I took the time to take the cert and it said, you need these things in there. This is how it's supposed to look. So that's why we're doing it that way. And then eventually we'll get into something fancy where we do things with things like HSRP and more port channel stuff to see how, you know, like a real collapsed core in a medium-sized environment would look. And so I think that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But now what we need to do is we need to talk about some homework that you have to do in order to get your new switch that's connected to the network configured properly.
Okay, so what do I need to do?
So you need to look at the VLANs that have to be on that particular switch. What VLAN is that stuff supposed to be in? What subnet is that on? And then how are you going to configure the ports that connect to your Raspberry Pi data center? Like when you plug in a Raspberry Pi, what kind of port is that going to be and how do you configure that? So those are some things that you have to do in order to clean things up a bit. And then we're also going to have to take a look at how we're going to set up things like port channels in the future. So right now you have one cable connecting your switch to the core switch. What I'd like to do is set up a second one and then do a port channel.
Okay.
Now, what we didn't do this time around is the port channel configuration because we don't have enough ports configured on our available on that core switch. So the other switch that we have, that second one, that's going to go in the rack and we're going to use that to move some things off the core switch onto that second switch so that we can, you know, like my laptop, my workstation, your workstation can be moved into those or into that other switch. We may have other devices that we can add to that other switch. So we're going to try to clean things up a bit so we can open up that core switch for other things and make it just a core switch and move everything to an access layer.
Hmm.
So that's kind of what we need to do for that. And these are things that you've seen, but now what you have to do and what a lot of the certs do, and even when you do things like your Net Plus, they're going to ask you scenario questions. How do you survive those scenario questions? By actually going out and doing something, practicing, plugging cables into the switch. You know, one of the stories that I was telling you before, I was in class, we were doing Cisco stuff, and we needed to configure the switch or do something. And we had plugged in everything completely wrong. And it was something really basic that we had done wrong. And we had somebody in our group who had experience working with Cisco devices, did that for a living. He was still learning a lot too, but he was doing it on a regular basis. And so he looked at all of us like, what are you guys doing? That's not where that goes. And again, it comes back to having at least some experience working with the devices. Where do you plug in the console cable? How do I configure port channels? How do I configure a trunk? Well, now you can say, I've done that. And then little by little, you're going to change that to make it better, where you get better performance, better redundancy by using port channels. You know how to configure your ports for your data center and other devices on that network. So these are things that you're going to be able to say, I know how to do that because I've configured a Cisco switch before.
That makes sense.
So anything else that you found confusing about this whole thing? Why don't you summarize some of the things and tell us, you know, what you thought of the whole process of the lab and setting all of this up? Just some brief stuff that you think are important.
No, I just think configuring the switches, configuring the ports, make sure I understand, how the ports changed when, one was the root bridge and the other one was the non-root bridge. Understanding, how to put it all together and then double checking with the commands to actually see if what we did is showing. And if we, the verification of okay, these ports are configured as trunk ports or, this is configured as a root bridge, to me, that's helpful.
No, and that's important because one of the things that we ran into as we were doing this, and I can't remember what switch it was on. I think it was on your SW2.
Right.
We went in there and did some stuff and then we did a show run just to verify the commands were being entered in correctly. And there was some extra stuff in there that we needed to go take out.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you're adding stuff to the switch doesn't mean the old stuff is being taken out. You actually have to go in there and specify, no, I don't want that, and get rid of that from the configuration.
Well, and I think that kind of became clear when we did the plan, what we wanted in there and what we didn't want in there. And then, looking at when we did show run and we looked at the entire configuration, then we made a list. We need to take this out. We need to take this out. We need to take the port channel out. We need to reconfigure the ports, and I think that was helpful. I still kind of want to make sure that we documented well. And, one of the things that we were talking about earlier is that in a enterprise environment, you're going to have to say, okay, if we need to do this, we need to make sure we schedule it during a time that is not going to hinder production. And I think that also, even though that is not us, we're not a production environment in the respect to where a whole boatload of people, it would affect them. I still think that on the documentation, if we're going to make it realistic, we need to have that portion in there as part of our documentation.
Correct. You do have to have that. And one of the things that's really important about that is that anytime you make a change to the network, there's usually going to be some downtime. Not always, but there usually is going to be some downtime. So when you add in a new switch, you may be taking out an old switch. So in that case, there will be downtime because you have to unplug the cables from the old switch and plug them into the new switch.
One of the things I was really impressed when we were using ITOP, when we went ahead and were looking at the core switch, and we were getting ready to make some changes, how it brought up, hey, these other two devices are going to be affected by any of the changes that you make into this device.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So in your ITSM software, I always forget what the SM stands for, but it's basically your IT services that you have in there, your software to manage your IT projects and everything else, ITOP. There's other ones out there, but ITOP's the one that we're using. So one of the things you can do in the software is you can say that this device is connected to this other device.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I may have a server that's connected to our core switch. I may have a workstation that's connected to the core switch. Because we're in a small environment, we only had one switch to plug into. Well, we also have our firewall that has a switch built into it as well. But in this particular case, when we added the core switch into the change management ticket, all the things that were connected to it or that were programmed into iTop as being connected to that switch also showed up. Mm-hmm. So when you make your decision about how you're going to do your change, you know, hey, wait a minute.
You need to look in and say, how will the rest of these devices that are connected to this core switch are going to be affected by you changing specific part or a configuration on it?
Right. And the nice thing about that, and this is something that I think a lot of organizations may not do very well, because I know a lot of people, especially in that small to medium-sized IT department, they may not understand how to do that properly. But this is something that you really need to take into consideration. I'm making a change to A. I don't think about B, C, and D. Mm-hmm. So when I make my change to A, guess what? Part of my network is down. Why? Because I didn't take that into consideration. So that is huge. It's time-consuming to get that part of iTop configured. And I've seen this option in other IT management software as well, where you can do that kind of thing. But oftentimes, people don't configure that. So they don't know that that feature exists.
No, that was really impressive.
And that's huge. I mean, when it comes mm-hmm. to IT planning, you want to try to get as much as possible in there. You may not get everything. Like in our case, we missed a lot of stuff on Switch 2 mm-hmm. For your data center. But we had enough in there so that if we made a mistake, we could put things back.
Right.
And for the most part, your list was perfect when it came to configuring that core switch and at least getting some stuff sort of moving in the right direction for that second switch.
I mean, we're still going to have to modify that and add more to it, but at least the little thing that we did, it's there. And it has a fallback plan. And that right now, it makes me feel better.
Yeah, you always want to have that fallback plan because that's your safety net. You mess up, use the fallback plan. And make sure your fallback plan includes the necessary steps to be able to put things back the way they're supposed to be. When I used to work for the ISP, they wanted commands put in there so that they understood you were on the right track when it came time to putting things back the way they should be.
Right.
If you make a mistake somewhere.
No, I totally agree.
So we now have another switch for your Raspberry Pi data center that's functioning.
Yeah.
You just have some homework to do to do minor configurations on that to make it function properly. And then you're on your way to actually setting up your Raspberry Pi data center.
I know. I'm excited. I'm just hoping that I can get the homework right, you know.
Yeah. And we may have to sit down together and do that. But once we do that, though, then you'll have experience doing this and you'll have documentation for that. You can take the configuration, save that, put that on our DocuWiki, and then little by little, you can sort of go through that and then pick out things that are important and start adding that to the documentation. This is how we do a trunk port. This is how we do a port channel. This is how I make sure that this particular switch is the root bridge. And then we can have within our documentation, when we get our other switching lab going, which is going to be fancier with HSRP and all that other stuff in there, we can come up with a sort of basic core access layer configuration for a small to medium-ish size network. And we can say, this is our standard. This is how we do it.
Nice.
So if we're ever asked to go do this in the real world, you take that, you modify it a little bit, you deploy it.
See, for me, the documentation is going to be my lifeline. If I'm able to get an IT job, you know, I like to be able to walk in there with somebody says to me, you need to configure spanning tree, and I can have my notes and my plans and a way to do it to where, yeah, I can configure a trunk port and I can do a port channel and I can do, a spanning tree configuration and, figure out, do you want this to be the root bridge? Oh, yeah, I can do that, So for me, I think the documentation is going to be so important because, if you don't do it all the time, you're going to forget. But having gone through it several times in the lab and doing the experience and then, having the documentation should be something that will help.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No.
No, I think this is great. Now we have an extra switch in the network, and we're on our way to getting that data center functioning. So if you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to section9.us. And if you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.